to Backus here, abandoned by Gochner and Hughes.
Chris Blake on the right, talking about DABC and Senator Karen Main.
JT Martin, speaking from the center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We'll be right back after this short news break. Hi, I'm JT Martin, filling in today for a traveling Natalie Gochner. I'm representing the center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined with Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Good morning, JT.
Good morning, sir. And, of course, Chris Bleek on the right.
Great to be here. Thanks, JT.
It's good to be here, filling in for Natalie. Here we are, left, right, and center, sitting down for a meaningful conversation. Wish we could do more of this. So, topic that everyone's talking about right now is Baltimore. A lot of unhappiness there. National Guard called out. And I understand we've got some discussions up on the Hill about some concerns and possible related concerns and issues going on. What do you guys know about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Administrative Rules Committee, led by Senator Stevenson and Representative Oda, are looking at use of force and some of those types of issues. This is clearly a problem that, although we don't see it as significantly here in Utah, is something that really needs to be addressed. And I think it goes beyond just government solution. We need to have a conversation about society, family, religion, community, how these things interact with one another and why these issues are happening and what we can do to solve them as a community and address these issues. Because this is, you know, we've had this. It's cyclical from time to time, but it's become an issue and we need to address it.
Utah does have a problem. We rank very high, I think third in the country, on per capita shootings this year. We've had 13 police fatalities. And I don't sense, I sense a lot of what Chris is hearing in this Administrative Rules Committee that I'm on, which is, yes, there's something basically wrong with all the people that are getting shot, you know. There may well be. But as I went to that Administrative Rules Committee hearing a couple of days ago, and I saw the sea of white faces, all of them the same. The police chiefs, the officers, the prosecutors, there was not one person of color there. So here we are, they're tasked with finding out how are we going to make sure we don't have more of these problems and solve the ones we have. And the legislature conveniently only wants to talk about it in non-controversial, supporting the police every step of the way. We dare not ask any embarrassing questions. Everybody play along. And Representative Oda, as I brought this point up, despite others who went on and on and on and on, ceaselessly making points, was quick to interrupt to say, Senator, that's not really what we want to talk about. Well, it is what we want to talk about. We need to get to the core of the issue here, which does include families and broader sociological problems,
Chris,
but it also includes having to do with a close look at the way we enforce lethal force and other force in the state.
So, Chris, what do you know, Jim brings up the point. What do you believe is the issue at hand here? Is it that over excessive use by the police, too well armed by the police, or that we've got folks who don't understand how to, you know, interact with a police officer under a situation? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that it's one-sided. I don't think this is just an issue that the victims are to blame and let's blame them and move forward. I think we do need to look at the use of police force in our community. On some of our shows, we've talked more about the changing nature of the right or the conservatives at the state legislature. There is a concern on that front about use of force, and we're seeing that. The legislature took some very bold steps this year on criminal justice reform, and so we're seeing a change here in the state of Utah as it relates to the use of force and our police authority. I don't want to delegitimize police authority. They play an important role in our communities, but it's a collaborative effort to find solutions. It's not just one side or the other.
So, Jim, you're an old dog. You've been down the road. There's a lot of water under your bridge. Is this new? Is something like this happened? I mean, we think back to the 60s, 70s, where we had some of these, you know, different kinds of unhappiness and riots. There were issues where police brutality. Is this just the same story over and over again?
It is. It's pretty much the same old story. And if you're a minority, if you're somebody who feels as though you're being harassed by the police, please remember, the moment to argue your constitutional rights is not then. Whatever a police officer tells you to do, just be quiet, do it, smile, get arrested, do whatever they want you to do, and then bring it up later, because nothing good happens when you challenge a police officer at that moment. So I hope at least we can come out of it with that.
Okay. So, yeah, let's move on to something else that just is we probably all saw in the paper that Senator Karen Main has been blasting the DABC Liquor Commission over the employment of treatment of employees. It's just been going on, and we just have a lot of unhappy people again, both customers and employees. Here we have a retail business being run by a state agency. Where are we? Chris?
Yeah, I certainly wasn't present to hear Senator Main's arguments, and I know that there's some concern. The challenge on this issue is that I think you raised the state agency does run it, and we have to probably look a little bit more closely at some of those dynamics. But it's kind of a no-win situation, it seems, in my mind. And they do a great job of trying to run stores, deal with the parameters that they get dealt with. That's not unusual for other government agencies, have to deal with some of the same dynamics. And so I see it as kind of a no-win situation for both the agency and the public. But it's one that we just need to get our arms around.
Yeah. You know, I sitting here in the center and listening, I have to tell you that everyone that I talk to, and I have a very broad perspective, I believe, friends both left and right and in the middle and the neighborhood, everyone kind of I've heard is just saying this is a retail store and they're doing their best to try to do that, but it's being run by, let's say, bureaucrats in government. Does that make sense that we have the state, and I think a lot of money is being left on the table. It has nothing to do with alcohol abuse. I know the argument's there, but it is a huge generator of money for the state. Couldn't we do better?
It's a $350 million a year business run by idiots. I mean, there's problems in a lot of state agencies here and there, but there is no more incompetent group of people than the DABC. They all ought to resign, and instead of firing all those employees, they ought to be out of a job immediately. We can never call ourselves the best managed state with the people that are managing DABC now. They clearly couldn't manage their way in a neighborhood 7-Eleven, never mind a $350 million monopoly with stores all across the state. It is a mess. It has remained a mess since it's been a monopoly. Go back and look at the legislative audits, but it is a particularly miserable situation right
now.
Take a look at it, I think you'd agree with me.
Let's be fair, though. I don't think that these guys are idiots. I think that they're being given a task they don't know how to do.
I don't think so. Well, they don't know how to do. I think they're incompetent.
Retail is very specialized business, and it is tough, and there are certain rules. And if you are some guy that's been appointed and you do not have a retail background and you're trying to run an organization, like you said, millions, multi-millions of dollars, it's very difficult. Are we asking... I don't think they're idiots. I think that they're good guys and women are trying to do something that they do not have the skill set to do.
I'm not talking about the board here. I'm talking about the professionals, the so-called professionals that are running it. I don't know if they got their career training in North Korea and their monopolies or somewhere else, but go back and look at the legislative audits. It is a mess.
All right, we're going to head to a break. Please stay tuned. We'll be back soon.
This This is Jim DeBacchus on the left. I'm going to mellow out.
Filling in on the right for Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake.
And I'm JT Martin, filling in for the traveling Natalie Gochner, representing the center. Yes, we had Jim go outside and run around a little bit and get off some steam. So off to the next topic. Coal. It's the state rock, and it's a big deal for a lot of folks in our state who generationally have made a living mining coal. Power stations are getting shut down continually. The market is being reduced for coal. There's a lot of arguments whether that's good or bad, but you can't blame these folks that make a living and who survive by mining and extracting coal are trying to find some other markets. So they've come up with a scheme that to take a harbor in the Oakland area and deep dredge it for deep water ships, and there they can send the coal. So it's $53 million that four different counties are being asked to come up with to be guaranteed a slot in that shipping area. What do you think about that, Chris?
Well, I think that it's not knowing all of the details, of course, the Community Impact Board, who will decide this and look at spending this money, I think it sounds like an interesting proposal and one that they should really vet through. It makes a lot of sense to find ways to export our minerals here if we can find other markets for it. And I'm excited. I think it's important that people realize, I understand coal's gotten a real negative hit, and I'm all for utilizing natural gas, which is a local fuel source, as is coal, but is much cleaner. But the issue is we still use coal, and it produces the stability that we need in our economy. It allows us to grow and develop. And so as that industry starts to shift and move, I think it's great that they're looking for other solutions. And this is sounds like an out-of-the-box proposal. And I don't know all the details, but I think it sounds great. And I'm excited that they're pursuing other alternatives.
So, Jim, I think we'll just pass you up because I'm sure you agree with that. What's your opinion, sir?
Look, the federal government charges a tax. They give the state back. The state gives local communities some of that. It's called the CIB. Traditionally, that's used by rural counties who have their land locked up in a lot of federal land to do good things for their community. It buys fire trucks. It buys libraries. Sometimes it helps with the schools. It has a tremendous impact in the local community. What's happening here? You were right. A scheme by a bunch of the big national coal companies to have that CIB money go to buy a bunch of land outside of Oakland, California, so that Utah will have capacity for the next 100 years to ship its coal to the Far East. Except there's no equity involved in that. That $53 million goes to buy capacity. It is a Rube Goldberg plan. It is out of the pockets of the community, and communities that ought to be making a transition to other things. It's a scheme, and it ought not to happen, and it's just part. Another CIB project takes $80 million to build a road in the Book Cliffs in the most scenic, beautiful land in America.
We're talking about Sea Bridge Road.
Yeah, we're going to build an $80 million road out there so they can get all the stuff, the fossil fuels, out of there. Our rural counties need to understand that this fossil fuel,
it's a scenic byway, Jim.
Exactly. And just what for fuel trucks. Exactly. I'm just saying, I think it's all a scheme, and the people in these counties ought to be using this money for things other than enhancing the pockets of the big coal companies.
Well,
this is big mistake.
People have said, Utah has a really bad habit of socializing the expense and privatizing the profits. Chris, do you think that's a fair statement?
No, I don't. I think that it's important that the monies that are generated on these lands, that those local community members, those local counties, the CIB board, have the ability to make decisions to grow their economic base and to look beyond their borders. I think these roads, these types of projects are important. And if they determine that doing these types of projects are best, it's the money that's generated in those communities, and they should make decisions that are best for them. I hope that they'll be thorough and look through the proposals and the deal points and make sure the benefit equals the cost that they're expending. But I think that makes a lot of sense. And we on the Wasatch Front often forget the unique and different issues that they face out in those rural communities.
You know, I'm going to get angry comments and emails. You folks here will be getting. But we got to bring up what is the issue. The issue is that, yeah, it sounds great. We're taking a Utah product that has lost its market, and we're shipping it off to another market. You know, where's the problem? Well, people are saying that, you know, coal is very problematic. We're sending it off to other countries where they're going to be burning it with technology that's, you know, years and years behind our clean coal burning technology, that coal is going to hurt those people who live in those communities. Do we have a responsibility to them? And eventually that coal, and it's, you know, people are pointing to the fires in Russia and the wind and the storms and windstorms in the Middle East, that those are affecting us here now. So why wouldn't, you know, coal, supposedly it is coming over from China. So how do we address those concerns?
All right. I guess that's what we'll have to work on. We could spend hours on that, JT.
And then natural gas is the folks who produce natural gas are saying, you know, this is not a bad thing because we have a clean energy, cleaner energy, and we should be putting our efforts in that rather than, you know, promoting something overseas.
It's $53 million that ought to be used in local counties that the CIB has decided to dole out as in a desperate attempt to save their own businesses. They ought to be ashamed of themselves.
All right, let's talk about this. All of us have served in public positions. We have a situation where people are upset. We've got a councilman who voted on a new job for $80,000, and he realized several months later, hey, that's a job I'm going to apply for. Conflict of interest?
I was going to apply for it, but...
But you're not qualified.
Look, I don't think so. I mean, processes are long and weird and go through enough things that it's pretty hard to game a system to create a job for yourself. And if that's happening, shame on them. But I have a hard time throwing stones at...
So this guy, it's a pretty miserable this guy works process. For Salt Lake City now, basically doing the same job. And he will be making $12,000 more in this job than he did in Salt Lake City. But he's also losing his $12,000 salary as a part-time councilman.
I think that I'm going to go out and agree with Jim on this. I don't know. You know, the process is important here, and particularly when you're in public office, creating and developing a process. It's hard to be in public office. A lot of people take criticism for it. And as long as they were above board and followed the law and what they did, I don't see a problem with it. But that seems to be the issue, is did they follow the law as they were supposed to? And unfortunately for West Jordan, the battles rage on. We've seen those for a number of years. And so...
Something weird in the water down here.
Wish them the best as they work through
boom.
This.
Boom.
Yeah. But I think it's naive if they were surprised by this. I know from my experience, anytime that you take a job that you help create, people are going to criticize it.
And I got to say, the governor, I think, did a good job. And I'm not sure whether he decided that but it was part of the legislation on his big pay raise that he wouldn't get it until after an election. And I think there's plenty of things to nitpick public officials about. This one didn't strike me as
all right. Let's nitpick this
nitpickable.
One.
Nitpickable.
We have as you remember, during the Pride Parade last year, we have a Salt Lake City motorcycle police officer who said, I don't feel comfortable doing the job that I've been asked to do and for this Pride Parade, and the controversy began. Now he... just recently took a job with the Southern Institute as helping for fundraising. Jim, you know, is that a subject dear to you?
Oh, I don't care. I wish the officer good luck. He's also the officer. Do you remember a few years ago there was a big controversy on that little block of Paris that is between the Joseph Smith Building and Temple Square that used to be Main Street? And two gay guys were walking home from a concert, and one of them gave the other a peck on the cheek, And there was tackles involved in church security, and the police came, and the police report was filled out by guess who? This same guy. So it may be a specialty of his. Look, I wish him well. I hope he has a good job, and I can't imagine a better place for him to work than the Sutherland Institute. It's a marriage made in heaven.
Well, you know, I couldn't understand. I think it's great if you have beliefs about that, and this is something you don't want to do. But what about, you know, taking a personal day, which I believe they have, and just, you know, take a personal day, stay home with your family, and be done with it? Why is this? He made it an issue.
I think the beauty of this situation, these types of situations, we've seen this with the recent uproar in Indiana, the way Utah. Our community, our citizens handled both religious liberties and anti-discrimination was the model that the rest of the nation should look towards. And a number of people, we've talked about this before, to be complimented for that. But kudos to the state of Utah for moving forward on this in the right way.
And you know what? I mean, I think of paramount importance are the religious values of emergency responders. I mean, if a policeman arrives at a scene and there happens to be an African-American there, and he has the responder has a proclivity against dealing with African-Americans that is religious, that responder ought to be able to say, I'm sorry, I can't give you CPR. My religious liberty prohibits me from giving that to you. We do not want to take away the religious liberties of these first responders. And if they don't like dealing with gay people or African-Americans or Mormons in Alabama, we need to respect the dignity of those first responders to walk away and say, my religious freedom trumps your ability to get CPR. Clearly, that's the only logical, reasonable position.
And I appreciate Jim's sarcasm, but I agree with him. I mean, our government should be open to all people. Those folks that choose those jobs have a responsibility to protect all citizens equally. Goes back to some of our earlier discussion, and so they don't have some of the same rights. Our rights when we take certain jobs or certain responsibilities in our life and community are changed. Or altered based on those responsibilities we take on.
I got to go to a lot of meetings and listen to a lot of people like me bloviate with my job.
So Chris, I am so glad you made that clear, because I was sitting here listening to Jim, and there was a moment I was really taking it in. I thought, well, hold it, wait a minute, this is not making sense in my world. So, I just don't understand. If you have a strong feeling like that, you know, take a personal day, unless your goal is to make a platform, you know, make it a platform issue.
All right.
Great time of this program where all three of us get to talk about the gripe that we have brought into the studio today. So, Chris, what is your gripe?
My gripe is this. You know, the Democrats, Jim and his crew, have been attacking Republicans for years for being anti-science, denying climate change, and now it's come full circle. The left has forced Chipotle into taking GMO products off the shelf. They're not going to use them. It's the exact same thing. We're denying science. Genetically modified organisms in crops and food are not a problem. Science has confirmed this, and the left has gone nuts and are attacking those that utilize that. And so climate change on the right, GMOs on the left, one happy world.
Jim, I know you're not comfortable with this segment, but try. Do you have a gripe?
I have no gripe. I feel like all I've done is gripe this whole session.
Oh, no.
So I'm just going to smile and say, isn't it great? Spring is here, and wish everybody a completely amazing spring and summer. So I'm going to forego the gripes, but I could recap the gripes I did have.
Oh, well, let me do my gripe, because, you know, who knows when I'll have my next chance. My gripe is that city politics, I believe, is absolutely great. No disrespect to you guys, but city is where it happens. You know, every day you are able to make real decisions about stop signs and where there's water and sidewalks and things that you can make a difference to. And we keep trying to make it a political position that it's a Democrat or a Republican. You know, toilet water doesn't care. And as I see Salt Lake City's election coming up, I keep seeing that, you know, oh, there's the Democrat Mayor Becker, and there's the Democrat Jackie Biskupski. And, you know, I hate seeing that. And sometimes I've even seen council members putting their party affiliation on a sign. I just think it's absolutely inappropriate. And municipal services, I hope, can remain nonpartisan, because that's the best way we get things done. So.
Well, I agree with that. I can live with that. And it is going to be an interesting race. I have yet to hear our good mayor respond to the issue about when did the sales tax increase sneak on to the prison relocation committee. And I hope sometime before the election the mayor stops stonewalling that question to see exactly when that slipped in.
Okay, that was our No Gripe Today, Jim DeBacchus. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program was produced by Ross Chambliss.